This morning I want to talk about one aspect of the contemplation of the citta, the heart-mind, and this is contemplating the thought stream using thought as a meditation object. This particular aspect of the practice is useful for people who are distracted by thought. So if any of you have had that experience, you might find it useful. Thought is extremely interesting. It can be one of the major barriers to meditation, or apparent barriers. People often get very frustrated with it. Why won't my mind shut up, even for a moment? And, of course, it's quite natural that the mind produces thought. That's one of its jobs. The mind is constantly throwing up imagery, like sparks from a fire. And what we do is we send the awareness in to grab any one of those thought moments and then turn it into a movie. And the movie has an obsessive interest for us because we're particularly interested in the star of the movie, which is, of course, myself. So we find that we generate all these narratives. All of them star me, and therefore all of them are intensely interesting. But also, which is one thing which is really quite weird, is that some of these narratives cheerfully contradict each other. I can be running the narrative that I'm definitely, without any doubt, the worst meditator in this room. And then 5 seconds later, be running the narrative, now come to think of it, I'm the best meditator in this room. And whatever the narrative is running, we believe it. That's the reality. Despite the fact that they contradict each other so much. But we don't care. As soon as the next one comes up, we buy into it. And it doesn't matter how much they conflict with each other. Still, when it's running, that's what's real. This is really strange, and it has to do with identity. It's obvious that thought is one of the major ways in which we construct our sense of identity, our sense of who we are and what the world is. And so we keep buying into it, even though rationally we know that it's rubbish. So the contemplation of the thought stream is very interesting for uncovering the construction of the self, how in this moment we are constructing a reality, a sense of this is me and this is my world. And we do it all the time, and we can see it unfold moment to moment when we look at the thought stream. So it's very useful for getting a sense of not self. Because when we contemplate the thought stream, what we're looking at is self. If we're looking at self, where are we looking from? Well, we're looking from beyond the self. So we're looking from not self. All meditation, but this particular exercise, really brings out the centrality of what we could call reflexive awareness. The capacity of the mind to know itself. Now, this is a crucial aspect of the mind that characterizes the human being. We don't just know that we know. So, for example, you might be driving our car, you know, this warm sense that we have inside the car of being in our own little world, and we pull up at traffic lights, and we feel a familiar sensation, and so we raise the finger and we start prodding around inside the nasal passage to dislodge what we feel there. We're quite enjoying it, and we happen to glance to one side, and we notice that someone has pulled up beside us and they're looking. And we think, whoops. And immediately extract finger. And when the light turns green, we drive off in haste and hope we never see this person again. Now, this is a very interesting experience where using the finger, and where it's almost like we know the experience, we know the sensations, and we're quite intimate with them. And then when we notice the other person, it's like we immediately have this sense of ourselves watching ourselves. We know what that other person sees. We can separate ourselves out and actually look at ourselves doing this. So we don't just know that we know. And we normally call this self-consciousness. And self-consciousness normally has a kind of bad tinge to it when we talk about it, because self-consciousness is obviously reflexive awareness, but it's reflexive awareness accompanied by paranoia. And it's the paranoia which is uncomfortable. But in the meditation, what we employ is reflexive awareness without the paranoia. It's just the watching itself. And as I say, we as a species are characterized by this capacity. Maybe other species don't have it. Any species that doesn't have this capacity cannot meditate. If you look at a dog eating, you know, a dog definitely knows the experience of eating. But does the dog know that it knows? It's like sometimes when I look at a dog, I wonder. if the dog doesn't have that reflexive awareness, then the dog cannot meditate. They might sit peacefully, but they're not meditating. So it's this capacity is really fundamental to both to humanity as such, but also to this whole enterprise of meditating. We have this capacity to look back upon ourselves and to see what's going on in the mind. So we have, in this instance, the capacity not merely to think, but to step back and to watch ourselves think. Now, one of the things that becomes apparent, particularly apparent with this meditation object, is the place of location or perspective. If there's a knowing, the knowing is always located. I know from somewhere. So, for example, we all have the experience of sitting in this room. It's the same room, objectively. Yet each one of us has a different experience of this room, because each one of us experiences it from a particular place. Everybody who comes in here always heads for the same spot. So the room becomes very familiar from that one spot. You change your meditation location, it's like, oh, what's going on? It's like, I'm in a different room. I know that it's the same room, but it feels different because I'm experiencing it from somewhere else. So perspective, or the location from which we know, changes the experience, affects the experience. So, for example, hearing conversation. I might be happening to sit in a cafe, and beside, in the table beside me, are some of my friends who don't know that I'm there. I hear them gossiping about people. I hear them gossiping about someone I don't know. Yeah, I hear them gossiping about a mutual friend. Oh, this is interesting and amusing. I hear them gossiping about me. This is extremely interesting and not at all amusing. Objectively, the experience is exactly the same. But my experience of it is completely different depending on, again, perspective. When I hear people talk about someone I don't know, it's like it's far away. The whole experience is far away. When I hear them talk about someone I know, it gets closer. When I hear them talk about me, it's really close. Now, the closer it is, the more real it is, and the more powerful it is, and the more I get sucked into it. If I consider the whole situation of being distracted by thought. I might be sitting here meditating away, and in the background there's thought, but it doesn't particularly bother me. And suddenly I realise that I'm right in it, that I've been swept away by a thought, the meditation object has disappeared. One way of looking at the experience is, when I'm with the meditation object, there's thought in the background, the thought's over here, somewhere else. I'm here, but the thought's over there. But when I'm distracted, I am in the distraction, or rather, the thought is in here now. So I'm experiencing it much more intimately. The perspective has changed, and along with it, the whole quality of the experience. So when we experience a physical sensation, there's always that sense of separation, of distance. I'm here, the sensation's there. But when we experience thought, often it's I'm here and the thought's here. And they're all, and it's all tangled up. And this is what happens with the thought stream because of our determination to identify with it, our habit of constructing ourselves in accordance with the thought stream. I am who I think I am. So the work in using thought stream as a meditation object is to constantly work to objectify the experience. Or it's a constant work of stepping back out of it in order to look at it. When I'm in, I am the thought stream. When I step out, I'm not. The thought stream is just a phenomenon. It's just stuff that's happening. Whereas I'm out here watching it. This is what we do in any meditation practice, but particularly working with the thought stream, the point from which we know thinking itself, we strengthen that place, that we could call it the witnessing point, or the platform from which we witness thought. And we keep working on that and making it stronger. And it's essentially objectifying thought. One way of looking at it, there's contemporary Indian sage, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, talked about this practice very nicely. He said, it's like a mother watching a child play with a favourite toy. So the child is playing with the favourite toy, and the child is absorbed in the toy, completely absorbed in it. That's our normal relationship to the thought stream. We're like the child playing with a toy, completely absorbed in the game. The mother sees the toy, but that's not where her interest lies. That's not what she's paying attention to. What she's paying attention to is the child playing with the toy. It's a bigger picture, and in a sense, much more dynamic. She's watching the relationship. She's watching the whole game. We are training ourselves to be like the mother, watching the child play with the toy, instead of our usual thing of playing with the toy. And again, it involves a stepping out, stepping back, and not rejecting anything, but seeing the dynamic and getting a sense of it. What we're going to do is a series of exercises in contemplating the thought stream. For each of them, we're going to begin by staying with the body, using the body as the anchor. Again, one way that we've noticed that attention works is that attention will always select, out of the whole field of experience, will always select one aspect of the experience and put it at the centre, and then notice that there's stuff going on around the periphery. So I focus on some aspect of the body, and I might notice that there's thought swirling around in the periphery. So in these exercises, we start with the body, anchor ourselves in the body, And at some point, we're going to switch our attention to the thought stream itself. Then the thought stream will be at the center, but on the periphery, there will be the body, our sense of the body. Anytime you notice that you get sucked into the thought stream, then just pull out and come back to the body and re-anchor yourself in the body, and then from there, turn back to the thought stream. Any questions before we get started? Okay, let's get into the meditation posture. So settling into the body. And feeling the body. And settling into your meditation object within the body. And just staying with that meditation object, staying with the body. Now at this point, stop thinking. Don't think. Okay. Any luck?
Is it possible to stay with the body and not get distracted away, but the thoughts were like they were very quick and I didn't grab onto them, so they were sort of out here because I was, you know, putting energy into being with the body. So because of the force of that, the thoughts didn't take hold and I could see them.
So with strong determination on the body, you can reduce thought, but you didn't actually stop thinking.
No,
but you were able to keep them at bay. Mm. But of course, as soon as you would release that hold on the body, the thoughts would come rushing back.
You can almost feel that squash down thing inside, and they go more and more subtle and less engaging. And at one point I started to think about not thinking, so it came in the back door.
So at first you were able to suppress it somehow, but then of course the commentary comes in, that this determination to comment on the experience, and the thought creeps in through the commentator. But being blocked.
Touching. Is that thinking?
Of course, yeah. Never mind. That's using thought energy in a particular way. But it is thought, isn't it? Sometimes if you have this determination, okay, I'm not going to think, I'm just going to stay with that meditation object, sometimes you can do it for a while. But what you're doing is you're constructing a dam. The pressure is building up behind it, and sooner or later, in it comes. Did anybody actually simply stop thinking? Yeah, you did?
Yeah. Like, basically, the whole time there was no thought, was just emptiness of the abdomen going in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And in that emptiness, it was like a tranquil state.
And how did you do it? Hmm. That's often the case.
Hmm.
It is possible to stop thinking. Thought is natural, and the cessation of thought is natural. But thought doesn't normally obey our commands. So it's a process which is going on, you know, regardless of our will, but it's not inevitable. It arises and ceases dependent upon conditions. Rather than suppress thought, and often that's what we try to do, is we try to suppress it, but it doesn't work, because sooner or later it comes rushing back. What we need to do is to study it. If I'm bothered by thought, clearly this means that I know that I'm thinking. But how do I know that I'm thinking? And that's the next thing we're going to investigate. So if you get into your meditation posture, settling into the body and feeling the body. And at this point, turn your attention to the thought stream. Are you thinking? If you are, and if you know that you're thinking, then thoughts must be appearing to you in some way. How do thoughts appear? Do they appear as words? As visual images, as feelings, as combinations of these, as something else. Study the flow of these thoughts, not focusing on their content, but on their appearance. How they present themselves to you. How do thoughts appear? Okay, how do they appear? Yep.
The mixture is like the running commentary, very often, or the humor,
and written commentary, it sounds like.
Also, like sometimes I hear and I see the word.
So, oral and written.
Yes.
Yep. Yep, Geraldine.
It came from the Sanskrit. You might hear something, you get a session of picturing, you know, someone coughing or a bird. And I at first had trouble deciphering whether I was just observing it or whether there was a thought coming through. So indeed there was a flash of the thought of not a full sentence. But for me it was in the response to the sense of including inner, the feeling.
So you've got a commentary running, but which is intimately linked with the senses, the six senses. Yeah. So yeah, stimulated by sense experience, then you have mental activity. So when you look for the thought stream, it largely disappears. But what you get is again still this mental response to the senses, the sense doors.
So I could never really quite get what it was that I was going to be looking at. There was no energy or determination involved in it this time. There was no effort. It was just like, oh, well, that's what I'm looking at, but then it was gone. You know? So it just kept dissolving without it being any determination. You know, it didn't need that sort of effort or will.
So it never had enough energy to form itself into something definite. It was kept dissolving, but at the same time it also kept arising, because otherwise it wouldn't be there to dissolve.
Yes, it kept arising, but I couldn't see from where. All I knew was that it was auditory, so there were like words, but I mean, I think if I left them form, they would have had other forms, but that was as far as they got.
But sounds like you were more focused on the dissolving of them than the arising of them.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a particular angle from which to view. It's once you start to look at the thought stream, not fight it, not treat it as the enemy, it's amazing the different experiences that will come up about, you know, what it's doing. We take it for granted. We think we know what thought is. But then we start to look at it. Wow, this is weird. I've never noticed this before. It becomes quite fascinating. Let's do another one where this time the question that we're going to investigate is, where do you think? So if you get into your meditation posture, feeling the body and settling into the body. settling into the meditation object in the body. And at this point, turn your attention to the place where you think. This is similar to locating the place where physical sensation arises. But while physical sensation definitely has location, does the thought stream have location? People sometimes experience their thoughts in the general area of the head, so you may find it useful to begin there. But don't take anything for granted. Don't assume that you know. But look, does thought have location? If so, where do you think? Is there more than one location? Does the location change? Is there no location? Where do you think? Okay, where do you think?
For me, it changes very much. It depends on the subject I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a thought which is neutral, it's outside my body.
Mm-hmm.
It can be quite far away. Like when I hear the car coming by and I think the car is almost where the car is.
Mm-hmm.
But the more emotion is involved with the thought, the closer it gets.
Hmm.
So then, if I think like a loving thought, it's totally in my heart.
Hmm.
It's really in the body. Or if I think a frightening thought, it's in my whole body.
Hmm. So the more emotional charge there is to the thought, the closer it is, and the more embodied it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But generally, it's more outside.
Yeah.
The body.
But neutral charge thoughts are outside the body.
I can almost see
Yep.
But it's only some kind of emotion or some problem in your direction.
Yep.
I felt it was, first of all, I thought it was here, you know, sort of core area, and I thought, is that a concept? And then I went wider, and to me, my whole body was a receptor, a big receptor. So, as my friend said, it depends on the thought, but the whole body was involved as a receptor for thought.
Mm-hmm. So the whole body is involved in thought. Any particular area?
Well, at first I thought here.
At the base of the spine.
The second sort of chakra area.
Yep.
Between like the heart.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, is that a concept? Because it's something I've learned. And it felt very right for me. But then when I went wider, I was aware that the whole body is.
And when you were going wider, did you notice anything particular happening in those lower chakras, or was it just much more evenly distributed?
It was more evenly distributed.
Okay, yeah.
And I was aware of the whole energy field.
Yeah. And with a receptive quality that you were receiving sense data, and then there was mental response to the sense data. Yeah.
Yeah, at first maybe I just experienced myself the thoughts arising from the head, but then when I decided to investigate on that, questioning myself, I was looking for the place where the thoughts originate, and the thoughts eventually dissipate, and I could not identify where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. So the thoughts evaporate once you start to actually look closely for the point of origin. You try to pin it down and it just disappears. Yeah. And sometimes thought can't stand the spotlight and so it just disappears. But sometimes it stays and you can see it arise. So you felt it in the speech areas.
Yeah.
What you get, of course, is a huge variety of experiences. And of course, there's no one right experience. It's just what happens. You see certain patterns emerge, but the variety of experiences is immense. But it's always important, especially when working with the mind, never take it for granted, never assume that you already know what's going on, but look as if for the first time and see what it is. Shall we do another one, or have we had enough? Let's examine the question, what does thinking feel like? Okay, let's get into the meditation posture. Feeling the body, settling into the meditation object. And at this point, turn your attention to the thought stream. As thoughts cascade through the mind, do not attend to the content of the thoughts any more than you would attend to the details of a clock ticking in the background. Focus on your relationship to thought, how you experience thought. Is it pleasant? Is it painful? Is it neither? Do you feel stuck on thought? What does this feel like? Do you feel frustration at your failure to escape from thought? What does this feel like? Focus on the relationship, the frustration, the stuckness, with the thought just flowing along in the background. Is there a desire to keep thinking? Focus on that and feel it. Is there a desire to stop thinking? Focus on that and feel it. What does it feel like to be thinking? And now, take the awareness back from the specifics of the thought stream and back from the details of the body sensation and open up to whatever is happening in body and in mind. Open up the awareness. Allow thought to come and go. No resisting. No attaching. Allow sensation to come and go. No resisting. No attaching. Just maintaining a clear connection with the nowness of the experience. How is it now? Controlling nothing, but staying alert to whatever is happening now. What does thinking feel like?
Claustrophobic.
Hmm?
Claustrophobic.
Mm. It often has that closed in feeling. It's like when there's no thought can have a sense of wide open, and the thought comes up and it's really. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes restrained,
sometimes
quite nice.
What do you mean by restrained?
Well,
oh, yeah. Limited. But sometimes quite pleasant.
Mm.
Is it sometimes both at once?
No.
Mm. One or the other?
No.
Mm.
I found that in the beginning, really difficult to get a thought. I felt myself really chasing them.
Yeah, that's one of the unreliable things about the mind. It's like a policeman. When you want to find one, you can't find one.
Constantly running after some kind of tail end.
Yes.
And then you said, open up to the whole body sensation. I found it very relaxing.
Mm.
It's like the thought is just another thing what pops up sometimes. And
yeah.
Sometimes a bird, sometimes a twinkling
in
the finger, sometimes a thought, and it's okay.
Yeah, just phenomena coming and going.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that frustrating saying to find a thought and work on that, so when I look for it and find one.
Uh-huh.
And you said open up to it, because I thought there's a thought there. It was intended.
Uh-huh. So looking for it meant you couldn't find it. But you stop looking for it, and boom, there it is.
And all that there was that thought. So, I thought I was going to think of that thought, and there's another thought. So, kind of opposite to what I was going to
think. Yeah. Very sneaky is the mind.
Well, a puppy when you say sits, it runs around.
Yeah.
And whatever, don't it, so it sits.
Yeah. And of course, that whole chaotic behaviour can be observed.
You're thinking back to it, I didn't want to come back to it, like being in space.
Mm.
It's very free and very enjoyable.
And sometimes, again, like with these, when we go through these exercises, they can be very specific. So it shows there's one. Two poles of the way of doing it is to go in and be very specific about the meditation object, and the other way is to come out and open to the whole field. And both approaches are valid. And so, one is suitable for sometimes, and the other is suitable for other times. But sometimes when you have that really detailed work, sometimes you do start to get claustrophobic. It gets too close. Well, then you can always just step back right out of it. But also learning to step in and out can be helpful. Like with thought or emotion, you get sucked in and it's too in your face. And so you need to pull out and step back from it. And just, it's there, let it be there, let it do its thing. But you just step back from it, give it space. So learning to make that move can be very useful.
It's very much
It's certainly driven by you and the choices that you make. When you start meditating and you're given a method, in a sense the method makes the choices for you. Which is good, because when you start you don't know what choices to make. But gradually, as you develop a skill, you get to know your own inner landscape, because you study it. And then you begin to learn, well, what should I do at particular circumstances? And that's part of the whole business of learning how to meditate, becoming a meditator. And of course, you do something and you monitor. What's the result of this? And that's the clear understanding aspect that we've been talking about. So sometimes the best thing to do is just to go back to the method. Just drop all the choices and just note the primary object. Get back to basics. Sometimes that's the best thing to do. And sometimes you play. You start to get to know that puppy. Yeah, getting to the emotional charge behind the obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thinking itself is very agitated, moving,
like,
and so on. But the emotion underneath is actually much more stable. And so you favour the stability over the agitation. And because it's the emotion that's feeding the thought, when you're with the emotion, then often it stops feeding thought.
I find that if I go into that spacious state, I almost go into like that samadhi state.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Why is it a problem?
I don't know where to come back to do more insightful stuff. Because the thought's so far away.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's really nice and serene and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I stay.
Mm. There's nothing wrong with staying in the spacious state if that's your natural tendency. The only thing you have to be wary of is make sure that it's clear and you don't veg out in that state.
I can notice little things, but they're so distant.
Yeah.
The thought content wouldn't be precise at all.
No, the content's not.
So then, therefore,
but you're getting insight into spaciousness, aren't you?
Yeah, but that's the territory I'm getting more familiar with. It's the other that's harder.
Yeah, well, just stay with what is natural for you. If the spaciousness works for you, just stay with that. But just get to know it. Just be clear on the spaciousness. The content of thought is of no significance.
That's where we'll learn our
obsessiveness and whatever. No, stay with the spaciousness. Get to know that, because that's what's there. That's the way your mind works. Your mind has a natural inclination towards that. So go there. Don't force it to do something that it's... You know, if your particular puppy likes to play certain tricks. So.
I have a bit of a space freak, you know, like I do. Often I notice things around me, so that is my natural tendency.
Yeah.
You know, I don't notice things and people say,
if you're determined to, what can I do? Okay. So, thought stream is... very interesting meditation object. Usually you use it as a secondary object. All those exercises we did, none of them were longer than 2 minutes. Thought is very high energy. If you spend a lot of time with it, often you can get completely spun out because of the energy aspect. So generally you use it as a secondary object. Go in there, see what's going on, come back to the body. But moving from one to the other is very useful. There are some people who use thought as a primary object, but they are a pretty much a minority among the meditators.
Do they go there?
No, they tend to go sane.
Yeah.
It's a question of whether you can handle the voltage, basically. If you can, fine. But it is one of the dangers of working with thought stream is that it is such a high energy and disconnected from the ground, as it were, that you can get spun out with it. So if you notice that, come back to the body, earth yourself again. But the important thing is that thought is not the enemy. It is ridiculous to think that I can't meditate because I think. It's absurd. You know, if nobody who thought could meditate, then the Buddha could never have meditated because he was a human being and he thought. You know, the mind produces thought, that's what it does. But we can look at it. But always interested in process rather than content. So none of those exercises were concerned with what we are thinking. They were all concerned about how we are thinking. That's the interesting bit. Okay. Thank you.